Chapter 8. Laura Archer looked out of the kitchen window. Jackman, silhouetted, stood motionless beneath the imposing hulk of the old mill tower. He'd said he wanted to check on something the builders had mentioned, but she knew he just needed to be alone for a while. Like everyone else who had been involved during Ashcroft's initial murder spree, Laura was feeling the strain of being constantly on guard. No one with a connection to Rowan Jackman or Marie Evans was safe. Her heart went out to the tall, brooding figure in the twilight. No one felt the gravity of the situation more than her darling Jackman. Added to this was a further problem that police work wouldn't fix. In her time as a force psychologist, she had occasionally come across this complication. An irrational fear, but no less serious for that. She needed to nip it in the bud before it escalated, but for once she didn't know how. She was too close to Jackman, and it's impossible to be impartial when someone you love is concerned. Laura let out a soft sigh. She had to do something. Of course. She'd do what she always did when a tough case or an unusual client bothered her. She'd consult with Sam Page, her old tutor and dear friend. Sam would know how to proceed. While she pondered all this, she saw Jackman take his phone from his pocket and hold it to his ear. He suddenly stiffened. After a few moments, he ran back to the house and burst in through the door. "There's been another shooting, Laura, in town. I have to go." He paused, looked anxiously at her. "Lock up immediately after I've gone. Don't answer the door to anyone, and ring me if there's the slightest hint of something not being right." "Darling, please, I'll be careful, I promise. Now, go." He was already pulling on his jacket and snatching the car keys from their hook. "I'll be back as soon as I can, but I'll ring first, so you know that it's me coming in." A hasty kiss, and he was gone. Laura locked the door, made sure the windows were all fastened, and sat down at the kitchen table to call Sam Page. Marie and Gary had managed to enjoy 3/4 of an hour of being ordinary before the call came. Marie paid for their meal and they jogged back to the house to pick up Gary's car. They were at the crime scene in 20 minutes.
"Who would shoot a homeless guy?" asked Marie incredulously.
Jackman narrowed his eyes. "I'm beginning to formulate a theory, but it's too vague to share just yet. The main thing is to identify him." He glanced over to the ambulance, standing with its blue lights intermittently illuminating patches of the darkened waste ground. "Kevin says the others reckon that the man hadn't been homeless for long, and that he was terrified of something."
"Does he have a name yet?" Marie asked.
"Barney," said Jackman shortly. "And Kevin, who, by the way, is very caught up over this, said that he had a rucksack with him, and he kept hold of it as if it contained the crown jewels." He pointed to a blood-spattered bag, still clasped in the dead man's hand. "I had a sneaky look before forensics arrived, and I made a surprising find."
"Yes, and?"
Marie asked impatiently. "A gun."
"What?" she exclaimed. "What kind of gun?"
"A Ruger Speed-6 revolver."
Why did that sound familiar?
Marie screwed up her eyes, trying to remember. And then it came to her.
"They were what we used before they were phased out and replaced by the Glock 17 pistol."
"Well remembered, Marie. But it wasn't only the police. The military used them too. The question is, what was Barney here doing with a loaded gun?" Jackman stared down at the body. Marie exhaled.
"No wonder he was hanging onto that bag."
Gary came across to join them.
"I've been talking to Kevin Stoner. Apparently it happened while he was talking to the guy. He's well shaken up, boss."
"I know. I've spoken to him myself. I've suggested he takes a few days' leave, but knowing him, he'll go home, down a couple of vodkas and be back in tomorrow."
"What was he doing off duty in this godforsaken place, Gary?" asked Marie.
"Trying to help out Charlie Button. He was looking for street gossip on the Red Diesel theft. There's a homeless guy hangs out here that he talks to regularly. It was pure fluke that Barney was shot while he was with him."
Or was it? Marie glanced at Jackman and knew he was asking himself the same question.
I suppose the shot was intended for Barney and not for Kevin?
I'd say this marksman is a crack shot and he wouldn't have taken out the wrong target. No, Marie, I'm certain he got the right guy. And then there is that revolver.
Jackman nodded at the rucksack. Uniform had brought in some halogen lamps and set them up in the area around the body. The very bright lights threw the rest of the scene into total blackness. It was strangely otherworldly, almost dreamlike.
Gary nodded to where the emergency vehicles were parked. Forensics are here.
Spike, equipment bags in both hands, was hurrying towards them.
Sorry you've got me again. Prof Wilkinson says we have another of our sniper's victims, sir.
He looked towards the blood-soaked body.
Oh my, he's not wrong, is he?
Afraid not, Spike. We could use your expertise again. I need to know where the shooter was standing and whether the same weapon was used. It seems obvious, but I have to have it confirmed, said Jackman.
Spike knelt and then looked closely at the wound.
Well, if it is the same gun, he's changed his ammo. The damage is far greater here than with Christopher Keyes.
Jackman grunted.
That's what I thought, which is yet another puzzle.
He looked around.
No Ella Jarvis tonight?
Sorry, sir. I'm the only one who is free to attend. She's already committed to another incident in Greenborough. We're thin on the ground this evening, so I'm photographer, socco, and pathologist.
That sounds like the deep end, Spike, said Marie.
I'm not complaining, Sergeant. I like the variety.
He looked up at Jackman.
I won't be able to tell you much until first light, I'm afraid, especially where the shot came from, but I'll make it my priority.
One favour? Asked Jackman.
The bag. Could you check it to see if there's any ID in it? And his pockets too. We need to know who this man is.
Give me a minute to photograph the body in situ, then I'll check it out, no problem.
His minute seemed to take forever.
While they waited, Marie mulled over the possible reasons for the man having a gun in his possession. It could have been a souvenir, or he was going to sell it.
In which case, why was it loaded?
Protection seemed most likely.
Protection from what? Or rather, who?
Gary had gone back to sit with Kevin. Marie and Jackman remained waiting for Spike to open the rucksack. Marie noted with amusement that Jackman had omitted to tell Spike about his premature glance into the bag. He had said nothing about the handgun. Crime scene contamination was a massive source of dispute between forensics officers and detectives. She herself had witnessed even high-ranking officers receive a tongue-lashing from an exasperated socco. Finally, Spike turned his attention to the bag. He felt around inside it.
Oh, I was expecting a few precious items from his previous life, fags and maybe a bottle of cider, but not this.
Spike drew out the gun and placed it straight into an evidence bag.
Is it loaded? Asked Jackman, all innocence. It is, as I'm sure you know, sir.
Spike threw Jackman a wry smile.
The flap on this bag has been lifted, after the blood had sprayed across it. The spatter pattern is slightly out of alignment. Nice try, but the prof warned me about what might happen if you got here first.
Jackman threw up his hands.
Good old Rory, okay, I'll cough, but I only glanced inside, so I do need to know about anything that could ID him.
Spike checked through the contents and shook his head.
Sorry, sir, there's nothing. The gun will be the first place to start. If it's licensed, you can trace the owner, and even if it isn't, you can check back to its original provenance. I'll ring you with the serial number as soon as I get it back to the lab.
Jackman stared down at the unfortunate victim.
Pockets. Can you check them too, Spike?
Marie expected nothing, and that's exactly what Spike found.
The fact that the gun is still loaded is a bit disconcerting, Spike. Is there a safety catch?
Not on one of these, he smiled at her. But don't worry. They have built-in safety features to stop the gun accidentally discharging. Even if it's dropped, it's perfectly safe. In the right hands.
The right hands. Marie wondered about Barney. Did he have the right hands? Was it his gun, or had he stolen it? They'd already had one theft of a gun only hours ago. This could have been obtained in the same way.
Jackman's voice reached her as if from a distance.
We should leave Spike to work.
As they walked towards the ambulance, Marie could not help looking around to try and ascertain where the sniper had concealed himself. Spike had been right. That would have to wait until after daybreak. Uniform had already established a large perimeter area, excluding anyone other than emergency service personnel and extending beyond the waste ground.
I'm thinking another trip to our local gun expert, Kenneth Harcourt, should be lined up for tomorrow, said Marie.
First thing, never fear. And if this gun has the slightest connection to that man, I'm bringing him in for questioning, Jackman assured her. I'd call on him tonight, but I think we need to run the checks on the serial number first. I have to know who the dead man is.
It might come down to dental records if all else fails. I did notice his teeth were good, so he must have been receiving regular treatment, at least until recently.
She looked across to the ambulance.
Kevin looks like shit, sir. Has he got anybody at home, or does he still live alone?
I believe he's in a relationship, but I get the feeling they don't live together.
Jackman moved ahead of her.
I'll check. It's not a good idea for him to go home to an empty house after what he's just witnessed.
Kevin said he had phoned his friend Alan, who was coming to pick him up.
You'll stay with me tonight, sir. I'll be fine after a hot shower and a large drink. It was just the shock of it. One moment William and I were chatting, then...
His voice trailed off and he shook his head as if trying to rid himself of the memory.
You want a full statement, sir? Shall we go to the station before going home?
Tomorrow, Kevin. As soon as your friend gets here, off you go, understand? The statement can wait.
Jackman squeezed Kevin's shoulder.
And try to get some sleep.
Marie saw someone waving from the other side of the cordon.
I think Alan is here, Kevin.
Kevin stood up, unwrapped the foil blanket and gave him a faint smile.
I'll get off then. See you tomorrow.
Marie watched him join a tall, slim man with blonde, almost white hair and an anxious expression. Not the best way to bow out from his time as a uniformed officer. As from next week, he would be helping them track the sniper as a detective constable.
We should get away too, Jackman said. Uniform have got this all under control, and the sorcerer's apprentice is reveling in his new role as ballistics trauma specialist. There's nothing more we can do here. We are going to need our wits about us tomorrow, so try and grab some rest. We can't keep this one out of the press, unfortunately. The cack is really going to hit the fan when the public hears about it and armed officers appear on the streets.
Ruth is going to have to give one of her famous tight-lipped speeches to the media, where she talks a lot and says nothing, Marie said.
Damned if I could do it, muttered Jackman.
So far, the press has been told that we're dealing with an incident, said Gary. No details as yet. What scares me is the speed our shooter is working at. 2 deaths in 1 day. Does he have a list? Is he picking off specific targets? Or maybe they were just like little ducks on a fence, random victims who walked into the crosshairs.
They had reached their cars.
We have a lot of work to do to find out, Gary.
Jackman paused, looking at them intently. Guys, don't let this blind you to the fact that Alistair Ashcroft is still waiting in the wings. Don't drop your guard for a second, and please watch each other's backs.
Murray smiled at him. Believe me, I'm not about to forget Ashcroft, and the warning goes for you too, sir. You take care of yourself.
Marie watched the taillights of Jackman's car disappear. He was looking gaunt again, older, exactly like the last time Ashcroft appeared on the scene. Where was that trademark steely look in his eyes?
Come on, Sarge, Gary said. Let's go home and get ourselves a nightcap.
I brought a bottle of Jameson's Irish whiskey with me. It was my late sister's favourite tipple, and I'm beginning to understand why.
Good idea. I've had enough of today.
In a narrow lay-by on the outskirts of one of the Salton villages, 2 shadowy figures stepped down from an old Land Rover. They had not exactly covered themselves in glory on their last 2 exploits, so tonight they were determined to get it right. It shouldn't be difficult, really.
Okay. Ready?
Noah asked his brother.
Suppose,
Jacob mumbled. They climbed over a low fence, and keeping close to the edge of the field, arrived at a 5-barred gate.
They stopped and listened. All was quiet in the yard beyond. They knew there were a couple of sensor lights around the stables, but they had been observing the place and knew that there were several areas these didn't cover.
Good luck, bro.
Noah pushed him forward.
This is your thing, so get on with it.
Jacob looked a lot less confident than his older brother. Noah slowly swung the gate open and wedged it back. Once he was through, Jacob moved along the block of stables until he found the one he was looking for. He raised a hand to Noah and slipped in through the half door. Noah held his breath, hoping the horse wouldn't get spooked. It seemed to take forever until Jacob emerged from the stall, leading the animal across the yard towards him. He had placed a soft bridle over his head, and the magnificent horse was ambling behind him like a favorite pony. Once they were through the gate, Noah secured it again and followed his brother and the horse back across the fields.
There's an entrance a bit further down. I'm not risking jumping that fence we came over, whispered Jacob. Go back to the car and get home. We'll see you there.
Noah nodded and watched as his brother swung easily onto the horse's back and with a click urged it forward. He allowed himself a sigh of relief. Apart from the odd whinny and a few snorts, the handsome beast had been as docile as a lamb. Barring any accidents before they reached home, it looked like they had actually pulled something off for once.
Noah, too, was hoping the family would be pleased this time. He was fed up with being labelled a clueless moron. He felt even worse for Jacob. Okay, his brother had struggled with schoolwork, but he had other talents, like his way with horses.
Noah started the Land Rover and pulled away, smiling. Jacob had been awesome tonight. Just so long as nothing happened in the next 15 minutes.